Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, gather round the radio. It's time for another installment of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. My name is Michael Harrison. It's my privilege to serve as anchor of the program. It's an ensemble show with lots of good people involved. And the host and founder of the program is Carol Marks. Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues, and she's a champion in the battle against ageism. Carol's taking this week off, so I'll have the privilege of doing the interviews as well as being the anchor. Later in the show, I'll be talking with acclaimed historian Harlow Giles Unger, a former distinguished visiting fellow at George Washington's Mount Vernon, the author of 24 books, including 11 biographies of America's founding fathers and three histories of the early republic. We're going to talk about his new book about Henry Clay. It's called America's Greatest Statesman. Henry Clay, America's Greatest Statesman. He was a great compromiser, and we're going to discuss the importance of the lost art of compromising in today's politics. But let's kick today's show off in the spirit of the holidays, and we're going to discuss gizmos, gadgets, consumer electronics, and the rapid evolution of technology. Joining us is a man who I know from my work in radio and media. He is a well-known, nationally respected media consultant, and he joins us today. Holland Cook, there are so few people in the world that I know who are as in touch with consumer electronics as you. And, of course, that's just the tip of your media iceberg. But let's talk a little bit about consumer electronics, because 'tis the season for giving. And I not only always am plugged in being a man who's been around the sun more than 60 times in what I want to get for myself, but getting stuff for the younger generation can be quite challenging. First of all, tell us a little bit about this show that you recently attended.
The former Consumer Electronics Association has just changed its name to the Consumer Technology Association to reflect the scope of their work as being beyond gadgets. They've been typecast as a gadget show at CES in Las Vegas in January, and they've been begging the media to call it CES, and the media keeps calling it Consumer Electronics Show. But Google and Uber and Expedia and all the non-gadget ways that we interact with technology really make the scope of what they do broader than just gadgets. Everywhere you look during the course of a day, technology is changing things. And some of the places you look are not that pretty. There's a lot of talk in the wake of the terrorist attacks in France about the role technology has played in the bad guys plotting what they've done. And now we have the director of the CIA hollering at Apple to give them a back door to the encryption. But that would only inconvenience the good guys. When you go swipe your credit card at the gas pump, it's encrypted for your protection. And the bad guys are out there doing peer-to-peer encryption on the dark web. So it's not just what goes under the tree, but everywhere you look today, there is some sort of digital technology that makes what you do different than the way you used to do it.
Before we go further with this, Holland, the word gadget is kind of nebulous. Do you think the Consumer Electronics Show or whoever the people are putting this on are running the risk of losing their niche by suddenly wanting to be the world of technology? I mean, would people who are interested in going to this show to find the latest, you know, high-definition television or a smartphone that might be ahead of the game or any of the, you know, quote-unquote gadgets out there suddenly not be as inclined to be interested if it gets into this heavier stuff that you're describing?
I don't think they have a problem with loss of interest. There were 176,000 of us working press attending last year, and that itself has become an issue. They've raised the bar in terms of media credentials because even as well as Las Vegas accommodates big events, the size of this one is challenging Vegas in terms of available hotel rooms, the price curve of airline tickets, et cetera. So there's no danger that the bloom is off the rose. And your point about the gadgets, they do come in all sizes and shapes. I got to drive the electric Beamer last year, and they had a bunch of them in the parking lot, and they give you a little roadmap of the course you're supposed to follow around Vegas and then come right back. And believe me, as soon as we got us out of sight, I punched that thing, and it kicked in. I was tempted to make a run for home, but I would have only gotten 100 miles. So there's that. The driverless car that we've heard is coming is there. Mm-hmm. I sat in it last year, and you don't face forward. It's like a conference room, a living room. You face each other because the car is driving itself. Mm. And we've heard about the Internet of Things. Your refrigerator is arguably a gadget, and maybe yours isn't automatically ordering new milk when the jug gets empty, but that technology exists. And when, at some point, you drive your brand-new driverless car off the dealer's lot for the first time, and a deer jumps in front of your driverless car, the car will already know what to do because the other driverless cars told it what a deer is. Mm-hmm. We're aggregating all kinds of information that the machines are swapping with each other. Last year in Las Vegas, we were all chuckling about this electronic toothbrush. And you can permission the toothbrush to send data to your dentist. And this is merely the newest expression of I've fallen and I can't get up. Many baby boomers are caring for our elderly parents, and we are enabling them with devices which we can permission to send data to the doctor to let you know how mom and dad are doing. And there are actually garments for infants that new parents can buy that have sensors in them that monitor the baby in its sleep. So when we say gadget, you're right. We do caricature what is going on in technology today. But make no mistake, it is going on.
Yeah, the world is becoming a gadget. And those of us who are immigrants from the old world of the 20th century living in this brave new world of the 21st century are having to learn the language. It is extremely alien to everything we grew up with.
Well, and you yourself have made an intriguing point about technology is just on the verge of being embedded. And we saw last year at CES the X-ray of the chip that they can install in your hand, just like in the James Bond movie. We just got a puppy 8 months ago, and the dog comes chipped, so her identity has been established. And we're just about on the verge of chipping each other. And think what that will enable. You get in a terrible accident, and in the ambulance, they know all your medical data. You never have to carry a set of keys or a credit card again. It will help guard against identity theft. And we're on the verge of something that you've been talking about, often drawing stares when you mention this technology being embedded. We are so close by virtue of the Apple Watch. It's actually wrapped around the hand that very soon the device may go inside.
And then you are truly a member of the Borg.
Yeah.
You see the problem here, this is all wonderful. The downside is that commodity that we used to consider to be a very basic right, and that is a certain modicum of privacy. We are not going to have any privacy as individuals within the species that is becoming increasingly technologically induced telepathic. It's a form of telepathy.
We've been volunteering our privacy so gradually that it's going to seem sudden. But if you're on Facebook, if you're using Gmail, you've already checked the box without reading that big, long, gray document that they send you. You say, okay, I'm down for that, and might not be aware of what you're permissioning the technology to do. It's been creeping into our lives for the longest time.
The genie is out of the box.
It really is.
And I don't want to spend this valuable time getting into all of that, but I cannot let that concept go without mentioning it, at least, as we're talking about all this.
Meanwhile, on a lighter note, with Santa on the way, what we learned at the Consumer Technology Association press event recently is an uncanny prediction, a forecast, not only of larger tech trends in the year to come, but they have an ability to nail it every year in terms of what will be in Santa's sleigh. And as futuristic as all this stuff we're talking sounds, here are the very familiar top holiday tech wish list top five items. And all of this is very familiar stuff. Number five on the list, video game consoles, which of course are used for more than playing video games. They are the gateway to the internet that you pump into your TV for many folks. Item number four on the wish list, notebook and laptop computers, which have not been preempted by iPad yet. I, among many other baby boomers, I imagine, have comfort in the familiarity of my Windows notebook that I tote around. Item number three on the holiday wish list, smartphones. And every time Apple comes out with a new iPhone, you gotta have it. There are actually more Android phones in use, and Samsung seems to have a new one quicker than every year. And, of course, our children and grandchildren think a 10-month-old phone is an antique. And I feel like I'm in Jurassic Park because I'm still toting around an iPhone that's 2 years old.
Oh, my. We're talking with national media consultant Holland Cook. He's a fellow who helps radio stations and television stations and internet sites deal with the changing technology and programming that goes with the technology. And he's joining us today talking about electronics, gizmos, gadgets, and gifts for the holiday season. And when we continue talking to Holland, we will find out what the top two items on the wish list are for Christmas gifts, for holiday gifts this year. I'm Michael Harrison. You're plugged into A Touch of Gray. Program continues in just a moment.
For Touch of Gray in Washington, D.C., I'm Suzanne Hannis. You may recognize the symptoms of elderly depression, loss of appetite, weight loss, social withdrawal, problems with hygiene, neglecting personal well-being, or even a sadness that lasts over 2 weeks. Sound familiar? Here's what you can do about it. Exercise, eat well, and don't forget to socialize. Researchers at Duke University suggest exercising at least 3 times a week to keep the body and mind healthy. That means swimming, walking, and maybe light exercise classes with the approval of your medical doctor. Another key to happiness is maintaining self-esteem through clubs and groups. You might consider the gardening club or a musical choir. And lastly, treat your body well and it will thank you by feeling well. That means practicing good nutrition and eating well-balanced meals daily. Naturally, the needs of patients vary, but feel free to consult a geriatric specialist to make a personalized treatment plan. I'm Suzanne Hannis. Find out more at premiergeriatricrn.com.
Retrievers, Labradors, Goldens are the main breeds that come through our door, but we'll train anything with 4 legs and a tail. My husband and I train hunting dogs and also have a boarding and grooming business. And our dogs, they're athletes, and we feed a very quality food. You can't get enzymes in a commercial dog food because they cook it at such a high heat. But adding Dynavite to their diet has every single dog in my kennel looking better than they have ever looked.
DINOVITE.com.
859-428-1000.
The omega-3 fatty acids.
Flaxseed, zinc, alfalfa.
The digestive enzymes that are cooked out of regular dog food.
Dynavite's the bomb.
We tell everybody we know about Dynavite.
Just feed your dog right. Use Dynavite. If it's working, don't quit.
When I get down to the bottom of my box of Dynavite, it's time to place my order.
Dynavite.com.
859-428-1000.
859-428-1000.
DINOVITE.com. You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Whoa, a digital music player. Thanks, Mom.
Glad you like it.
we can finally toss out that old massive stereo.
Mom, you can't just throw out electronics. They need to be recycled or donated.
Recycled? Like aluminum cans?
Yeah. You just go to greenergadgets.org, enter your zip code, and it tells you where the nearest certified recycling center is.
I knew that.
Okay, Mom.
Recycling electronics is as easy as buying them. Log on to greenergadgets.org to find electronics recycling options near you.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we get back to our conversation with media consultant Holland Cook and the top two items on the holiday wish list.
Two on the wish list, tablet computers. Not just, but mostly iPad, because it is a pretty cool device. And very familiar, very not futuristic, the number one item that we want to see under the Christmas tree is a TV. But what is television now? We've seen the new Ultra HD, four times sharper than HDTV, even though there is very little programming that high res available yet. And what is television programming? We've now got Hulu and Netflix pumped into the set right along with whatever the cable or the satellite or the over-the-air antenna is giving us. And in the way that radio has been redefined to include podcasting, et cetera, TV now seems to be defined as whatever you watch on that screen in the living room.
Yeah, basically TV is a big flat screen on the wall because everything is a screen. I mean, there are screens on your phone, there's screens on your tablets. All of the things that you mentioned here before have screens on them or are related to screens. So a TV, I think, in the minds of people today, is the big one that is flat on the wall in the living room or that you're looking up at if you're at a restaurant or a sports bar.
Yeah, and the programming producers are fashioning what they make so it looks good on whatever you're watching it on. And this is applies to the layman as well. If you're doing a blog, for instance, on WordPress, it's what they call responsive technology, meaning it looks different on a phone than it looks on a laptop, than it looks on an iPad, than it would look on the TV screen. Mm-hmm. I plugged the Roku box into my TV at home, and YouTube is a very different experience when you put it up on the TV screen. And there's so much stuff there, you feel as though you may never wander back to the old channels.
Yes. Yeah, I'll tell you, it drives programmers crazy because you cannot put the kind of expert detail and work into creating the art form of a magazine that's in print or a program that's on a normal size television or a record, an audio entity that's on, you know, a transistor radio or a hi-fi. I remember record producers used to mix the record sometimes through a teeny speaker because they figured most of the listeners are going to be listening in transistor radios. Then when the hi-fi and the big speakers became popular, they mixed the records on those kinds of speaker units. It really is similar then to what they're doing now, but there's so many configurations. I find that as a publisher of a magazine, when I was publishing in print, there were certain techniques I could do with where the picture goes, where the sidebar goes, where the caption goes, that creates an atmosphere and creates a pattern that you could make it a very, very effective reading experience for the viewer, for the reader. Now, there are certain things you cannot do in digital formats on that level.
And if you do it, and when you were publishing that hard copy tabloid, you knew exactly what your work would look like. Over lunch, the editor-in-chief of a major newspaper surprised me. I asked him, and this guy wasn't even 40 years old, and I asked him median age of your reporters, younger than you or older than you? And because he was so young, I expected him to say older, and he said younger. And he said that their orientation was digital, is that they figured they were writing stories for the Internet, and they had genuine curiosity when the hard copy paper came out because they wanted to see how different their story looked in print than it looked online. And clearly they had some concern that it made sense to the reader, no matter how the reader was reading it.
I'll tell you, Helen, what we're going through right now is a crisis in comprehension about the old maxim that Marshall McLuhan said decades ago, the medium is the message. We're going through a crisis in that, because I'll tell you my opinion. The medium will always be the message. The problem is, what the heck is the medium anymore? and that's the issue. I think eventually it's all going to settle in when we get to the point that it's embedded. The medium will be the part of your brain that recreates reality. But we're not there yet.
Well, that's the consumption end. And now when you talk about the medium being the message, think about all the new camera angles we're getting. That thing in the pocket that we used to call a smartphone, the least of what we do with it lately is make phone calls, but that is an HD video and still camera, the likes of which we didn't even have at consumer affordable prices a half a dozen years ago. If you look at a piece of video that is pre-HD, you feel like you're looking at this Zapruder film. It looks so antique now.
Mm-hmm.
And the most controversial camera angle of all is a really big deal at the CES event in Las Vegas, and that is drones. We were told at the press event in New York, and I find this very instructive, how they allocate this 53 acres of exhibit space that they have in the sprawling Las Vegas Convention Center. There will be, for instance, 40% more than last year exhibit floor space dedicated to health and wellness. And CTA CEO Gary Shapiro quips, hey, we're all getting older. Doctors are getting fewer. And, of course, the technology is enabling us to keep tabs on how we're doing and how mom and dad are doing better than ever. There will be 80% more floor space for virtual reality. But get this. At first, I thought it was a misprint. There will be 208% more floor space this year at CES for what they call unmanned systems, translation, drones. And aren't your neighbors thrilled to learn that you've got a drone? But it's up there beaming back high-res live video, and you're controlling it with either a controller or an app on your smartphone. And this technology is way ahead of our rules of the road. One of the ironies is that news organizations are getting special permission to use drones for news gathering, yet the hobbyist is unrestricted, meaning that you, a media publisher, may operate a drone, but your company may not. The rules are lagging the technology.
Yeah, well, I think that within a year or two, they're going to be highly regulated drone. There'll be a lot of regulations for drones.
I think if you get one for Christmas, you may find a postcard in there that you are asked to mail in, because we recently heard that the FAA is going to institute registration. So you'll at least have to say, I own one. I just hope they don't end up blocking out the sun.
We're talking with media consultant Holland Cook about holiday gift giving and consumer electronics. More coming your way in just a moment when A Touch of Grey continues. Michael Harrison here with you on A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. Very proud to be with you on this program. This program has been on the air in one form or another consistently now for over two decades. Kind of runs below the radar. It's heard on weekends on great talk radio stations around the country. And what I'm really proud about in terms of this program, in which I have the opportunity to serve as anchor, not as host. Carol Marks is the host, and I certainly am not the only voice on this show. We have a roundtable of outstanding personalities, experts, and broadcasters. What I love about this show is that in an industry marked by concern, focus, obsession with youth, and believe me, I'm about as young thinking as anybody you'll meet. Sometimes I'm even accused of being immature. So I'm all for that, and I'm all for looking ahead. But I'm also for fairness, and I'm also for respect. And the media in America driven by, obviously, Madison Avenue and commercial concerns, focuses primarily on young people. And if somebody's over 50 or 55 or 60, they quite often find that there's a lot lacking in terms of what's available in the mainstream media. So this program, which was conceived and developed by Carol Marx more than 20 years ago, originally was called Senior Focus, and it evolved into A Touch of Gray. And I became involved with it along the way, as something that really provides a service in as much as it unashamedly, unabashedly, unapologetically brings information to people via this wonderful medium of radio that is of use, of interest, of service, of comfort, of support to people over 50 years of age and their families, which is why I say at the beginning of the program, children of all ages. Because so many people in their 50s find themselves in a situation that has been kind of accurately and colorfully termed the sandwich generation, meaning they have children, adult children, still living with them, and abiding by the rule that came down a long time ago, honor thy father and thy mother, they have their parents living with them. In many cases, these parents are in their 80s, 90s, and are living at home. And the amount of pressure that can be put on somebody dealing with adult children and senior parents all under one roof is extraordinary, and it's a phenomenon that in many ways I applaud. I'm all for families staying together. But also, there are people who are in need of support and information. So in many ways, A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, is in fact a program for children of all ages. But I salute Carol Marx. I think that she has done and continues to do a remarkable job. And she does it under sometimes the worst of conditions because, like the rest of us, she's not getting any younger either. But she drives herself to research and get the information needed and select guests and topics. And not only that, she travels around the world and brings information from other countries on how their healthcare systems operate and how the services that they provide for senior citizens there are taken care of and done. And she brings that information back, not to mention she acts as a model, as a role model for people to get up and get out and live life and do things. And she's done everything from, she's explored, you know, if there were four corners on this planet, as the saying goes, she's been to all four of them. Check her out at the website, atouchofgray.com. Gray is spelled with an E. And I just wanted to mention that she is one fine lady, and we're grateful to be involved with her in this project.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray. Check out our website at atouchofgray.com.
My golden retriever, Sundance, is a lot more playful now. She has more pep and energy than I've seen in years.
Tons of energy. Petey is having fun again. He's got a shiny coat and a good healthy weight.
Molly's been having four scoops a day. She pushes her little bowl all the way across the room, emptying every last single crumb. She has slimmed down and gotten this puppy look.
She's got life. She's got energy. She's got stuff to give.
We get asked all the time when we're at shows, how do you get your dog so healthy and shiny and glossy?
DinoVite.com.
859-428-1000.
The omega-3 fatty acids.
Flaxseed, zinc, alfalfa.
The digestive enzymes that are cooked out of regular dog food.
Family will be on Dinovite for the rest of his life.
Just feed your dog right. Use Dinovite. If it's working, don't quit.
859-428-1000.
859-428-1000.
DinoVite.com.
Continuing with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. Let's get back to our conversation about holiday gift-giving and consumer electronics with media consultant Holland Cook. When we left off, he was telling us about drones as presents. How far can a drone go? Are you aware? I'm not sure.
It depends. Martha Stewart has a really nice one that's only $1,000. I remember when $1,000 was a lot of money. But they'll all go up there, and for somewhere in the $500 to $1,000 range, they'll probably have a flight time of about 20 minutes on that charge. And as the charge itself is getting low, the drone will know to go home.
But what about your control of the drone? In other words, how far? I assume I don't own a drone, so I don't know. To me, they're model airplanes, and I realize they're not. But
well, they are. Yeah, actually, yeah. They are. They're model airplanes with a camera in them. So
right.
Depending on the model, it will go so high and so far for so long.
My question is, and if you don't know the answer, that's fine. How far can it go from you where you still have control over it?
Yeah, it depends on the model, but it is now in hundreds of feet for the consumer, as opposed to what you saw in that Jason Bourne movie where the guy's sitting there in Virginia controlling the thing somewhere over Europe.
Well, that's technologically possible. I don't know if Europe is, but as long as we have, you know, GPS and we have satellites, it is within the realm of technological reality that I could send a drone off from New England and fly it to Los Angeles.
You could send an airliner off to do the same,
right,
but
right.
Nobody would get on it. They'd be afraid of not having a pilot up there. But in reality, what happens on the flight deck is that there are two people controlling computers. The computer's actually flying the plane.
Mm-hmm. Well, would you be afraid to get in a car in the next year or two and go out into traffic, sitting sideways, playing cards with your friends and not looking ahead and having control?
It depends on where, I think. This is not widely known, but driverless cars have actually been legal in the state of Nevada since 2009. And I wouldn't be surprised if the Consumer Electronics Association was behind having that happen for exhibition purposes. Amazon and Google have been at this for years. And I forget the exact statistic, but in however many thousand hours these driverless Google cars have been on the road with somebody sitting in the car, just not touching anything. Apparently, they've had 11 accidents, and all but two of them were somebody rear-ending the car.
Right, right.
So maybe the machines do certain things better than the humans do.
What's going to have to happen? It's going to have to be a system that's ubiquitous. It has to be across the board.
One of the whack on the side of the head headlines from last year's CES, and you really have to get your head wrapped around this, somebody who today is 5 years old or younger may never have a driver's license. And there are a bunch of converging factors, not the least of which is the driverless car. Driverless car is not much of a leap from the smartphone in your pocket now. I no longer print out directions. Even a couple of years ago when I was traveling, I'd print something out from MapQuest.com.
Yeah.
I don't even do that now.
No.
I land, I get in the rental car, I tell my phone where it's going, and the Google Maps app has given me turn by turn.
Mm-hmm.
So the driverless car, at that point, merely has me operating the wheel, but the computer is calling the shots. So there's that. There is the urbanization trend in America. There is the proclivity of younger people, our children and grandchildren, to use mass transit. But when you read the headline that somebody 5 years old or younger today may never have a driver's license, it's not your father's Oldsmobile.
No, absolutely. The way I see it happening within our lifetimes is that there will be designated lanes, designated roads that are for driverless cars. I cannot see them integrating into, you know, all of a sudden there's a driverless car on Interstate 95. And I wouldn't want to be in it. But
well, there's already an awkward relationship between the driver cars and the bike lane.
Exactly.
And the bike lane is new.
Yeah, but I see it coming in clumps where there are areas. Now, as far as our five-year-olds not having driver's licenses, I would say 25 years from now, which is an eternity based on how quickly technology is evolving, I would say that driving a car will be akin to riding a horse, that it will be considered a hobby, it will be considered a sport, as opposed to a day-to-day utility. What do you think?
Well, we already revere the classic car. Jay Leno's show on CNBC is an homage to all these cream puffs and antiques that he's restored. Jay Leno spent about $250,000 several years ago on a 3D printer, very high-end industrial model in its day, because he needs to make parts that are no longer available for some of these cars that haven't been made for generations. So he's actually cloning broken parts into new parts. So what's old is what's new.
Well, 3D printing is an area that you and I could talk for hours about, because that is a subdivision within all this new technology that will have enormous impact on the human condition unto itself. So in conclusion, holidays coming up.
It will not be a blue Christmas. The economic forecast for this year is that holiday gift giving is forecast to be 3.4% up from last year, a total of $788.5 billion, of which slightly over $34 billion is going to be tech stuff, and that's 2.3% more than last year. And I predict that the stocking stuffer of 2016 will be the selfie stick.
And there you have it, a conversation with media consultant Holland Cook. If you'd like more, like to find out more about Holland Cook, go to his website, survivalspeech.com. That's www.survivalspeech.com. Coming up next, a conversation with acclaimed historian Harlow Giles Unger. When A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues.
For Touch of Gray in Washington, D.C., I'm Suzanne Hannis. New guidelines from the National Institute of Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism for persons 65 and older reveal that if women drink more than 7 drinks per week or greater than 3 drinks per occasion, and men 14 drinks per week or greater than 4 drinks per occasion, you're at risk for illness or injury. As the body ages, the tolerance to alcoholic beverages decreases. Literally, at 65 and older, you're unable to process alcoholic beverages, as say a person that is 45. Alcoholic overuse and intolerance can worsen mental confusion, problems with balance and falls, depressive disorders, dehydration, inadequate nutrition, adverse interaction with some medications, and can lead to social isolation. One drink is 12 ounces of beer, 5 ounces of wine, or 1.5 ounces of liquor, or the amount in a shot glass. Are you ready to acknowledge that at age 65 and older, that fewer than 7 drinks per week or 1 drink per day is the limit and offers you the advantages of leading a healthier and safer lifestyle? I'm Suzanne Hannis. Find out more at PremierGeriatricRN.com.
When we ran out, we stopped using it.
Why would you stop?
Why undo all the good that's been accomplished? We thought everything was fine, and that was not a good thing.
No.
He started stinking. It was awful.
Shedding comes back, loss of hair, lots of dandruff.
Scratching will return. His shedding will increase.
If I ever took Roy off of Dynavite, he would go back to his hair loss.
DinoVite.com.
859-428-1000.
When I get down to the bottom of my box of Dynavite,
when I get to about 3/4,
oh no, I've got a couple more scoops,
it's time to place my order.
Dynavite.com.
Each and every day she is getting a Dynavite.
The omega-3 fatty acids.
Flaxseed, zinc, alfalfa.
The digestive enzymes that are cooked out of regular dog food.
Just feed your dog right. Use Dynavite. If it's working, don't quit.
Don't do what I did and run out.
859-428-1000.
859-428-1000.
DinoVite.com.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys. Just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security webpages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, and Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. And we're going to get into a little history here, just setting it up. We're at a time in our present history when it seems that we're extremely polarized politically. Compromise is considered by many to be a dirty word. Wishy-washy, soft, unsure, uncertain, fence-sitters. But the truth of the matter is, compromising has played a very, very important role in our history. And once upon a time, there was a statesman named Henry Clay who was considered the great compromiser. As a matter of fact, many people consider him to be America's greatest statesman. One such person is acclaimed historian Harlow Giles Unger, who wrote a book, Henry Clay, America's Greatest Statesman, published by DeCapo Press. Harlow Giles Unger is a former distinguished visiting fellow at George Washington's Mount Vernon. He's the author of 24 books, including 11 biographies of America's founding fathers and three histories of the early republic. He lives in New York City, and he is our guest now on A Touch of Gray. Will we ever get it right? In other words, when you embark upon an endeavor such as this, what does a historian bring to the table that's new as history evolves in terms of our look back at it?
Well, I think one of the things I try to explain in my books, and certainly Henry Clay is really the perfect example of this, is that this country was founded and built on compromise. The Declaration of Independence was a compromise. Half the people who signed it wanted autonomy, not independence. They wanted to stay British. The Constitution was a compromise between slave states and free states, big states and little states, rural interests and urban interests. And once the national government assumed power, its survival over the next 60 years until the Civil War, its survival depended on five major compromises worked out by Henry Clay, the man I call America's greatest statesman, on the title of my book. Americans in his day called him the great compromiser because his compromises saved our nation from disintegration during the decades from the signing of the Constitution to the Civil War, which was basically 75 years. So by holding the nation together, remember, there were huge, bitter splits, bitter divisions between the southern slave states and the northern free soil states, as they were called. He held the nation together long enough for two or three generations to emerge in the United States. And that allowed him to install his, what he called the American system, which was probably the greatest social, economic, and financial system ever devised in the world, and certainly in the United States. But when he came to office as Speaker of the House of Representatives, it was very difficult to travel in this country. You had to go on horseback. There was no other way. So people didn't travel. They stayed. They lived their whole lives in their states and considered their states their country. People called themselves New Yorkers, Pennsylvanians. They didn't call themselves Americans. The American system linked 20 states from Maine to California with roads, canals, and later railroads that allowed tens of thousands of Americans to move across state lines to establish farms in the West. And with those and businesses, and with those farms and businesses, they sold their goods across state lines. They had customers in other states. They had suppliers in other states. And they had relatives in other states who traveled back and forth to see each other. So that by 1860, when the Civil War did break out, a breakup of the nation was unthinkable for 20 million people who lived in the northern and central states of the United States, and they were not about to let a couple of tobacco barons and cotton barons in the South dictate to them and break up this great nation, which Henry Clay had built and which now stretched from sea to shining sea, as we sing in the song.
You're listening to a conversation with acclaimed historian Harlow Giles Unger, talking about his new book, Henry Clay, America's Greatest Statesman, published by DeCapo Press. And we'll have more in this conversation with Harlow Giles Unger when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in a moment.
For Touch of Gray in Washington, D.C., I'm Suzanne Hannis. You may recognize the symptoms of elderly depression, loss of appetite, weight loss, social withdrawal, problems with hygiene, neglecting personal well-being, or even a sadness that lasts over 2 weeks. Sound familiar? Here's what you can do about it. Exercise, eat well, and don't forget to socialize. Researchers at Duke University suggest exercising at least 3 times a week to keep the body and mind healthy. That means swimming, walking, and maybe light exercise classes with the approval of your medical doctor. Another key to happiness is maintaining self-esteem through clubs and groups. You might consider the gardening club or a musical choir. And lastly, treat your body well and it will thank you by feeling well. That means practicing good nutrition and eating well-balanced meals daily. Naturally, the needs of patients vary, but feel free to consult a geriatric specialist to make a personalized treatment plan. I'm Suzanne Hannis. Find out more at premiergeriatricrn.com.
Retrievers, Labradors, Goldens are the main breeds that come through our door, but we'll train anything with 4 legs and a tail. My husband and I train hunting dogs and also have a boarding and grooming business. And our dogs, they're athletes, and we feed them very quality food. You can't get enzymes in a commercial dog food because they cook it at such a high heat, but adding Dynavite to their diet has every single dog in my kennel looking better than they have ever looked.
DINOVITE.com.
859-428-1000.
The omega-3 fatty acids.
Flaxseed, zinc, alfalfa.
The digestive enzymes that are cooked out of regular dog food.
Dynavite's the bomb.
Tell everybody we know about Dynavite.
Just feed your dog right. Use Dynavite. If it's working, don't quit.
When I get down to the bottom of my box of Dynavite, it's time to place my order.
Dynavite.com.
859-428-1000.
859-428-1000. DINOVITE.com.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Whoa, a digital music player. Thanks, Mom.
Glad you like it. We can finally toss out that old massive stereo.
Mom, you can't just throw out electronics. They need to be recycled or donated.
Recycled? Like aluminum cans?
Yeah. You just go to greenergadgets.org, enter your zip code, and it tells you where the nearest certified recycling center is.
I knew that.
Okay, Mom.
Recycling electronics is as easy as buying them. Log on to greenergadgets.org to find electronics recycling options near you.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair as we come to the final segment of this hour of our broadcast and the concluding segment of our conversation with acclaimed historian Harlow Giles Unger. We left off, we were talking about how back in the days of Lincoln, people were isolated because they were separated by impassable roads. They didn't have today's interstate highways, and they didn't have the modern transportation that we have today. I always think of things from the lens of media, that media helped do that too. And I realize, listening to you speak, transportation and media really work together. Because back in the days of Henry Clay, they didn't have C-SPAN, they didn't have CNN, there was no internet, no radio, no television.
In effect, there were no media of any consequence.
Right.
There were a few newspapers. By the time you got the news in a newspaper, it was a month or two old.
Mm.
So that had less effect than the transportation network that Henry Clay devised and helped promote in his American system. And that was the greatness of Henry Clay, He was the first great speaker of the House. When he came into the House of Representatives, he found bedlam. Philip Derringer in Philadelphia had invented a new pistol with one shot in it that people could carry in their pockets, and almost every congressman had a Derringer in his pocket. They wrestled and fought on the floor. They rolled around like schoolboys fighting each other. And then they'd go outside and shoot each other in duels with their Derringers.
That's amazing. You know, I'm often asked by the press or people that are interested in the media, which is my specialty, are these the worst of times? Is this the most contentious it's ever been? Has our culture become coarser than ever? Are we polarized more today than ever before? And you think about it, hardly. Those were really wild days, weren't they?
Yes, indeed. We go back and forth, in and out. We are an enormous country with a huge, diversified population and a land that varies so widely in geography. It's very difficult for the American people to develop common interests, the interests of flood-ravaged areas in the far west or the deep south are not the same as the interests of the mountain states, Montana, Wyoming, etc., or the plain states or New England states. So it's very difficult to bind us as a nation. And the net result is that over 225 years since the first Congress met, Congress has only passed 5% of the laws that have been proposed. And even that 5% only passed after great statesmen like Henry Clay, and Henry Clay in particular, was able to show the differing interest groups that they had a common ground, that they couldn't get everything they wanted, but everybody could get a little piece of the pie if they cooperated and compromised and passed the few laws they did. That is not dysfunction, as a lot of people say today. The disagreements are legitimate.
That's acclaimed historian Harlow Giles Unger, and he's the author of Henry Clay, America's Greatest Statesman, among a lot of other books, too. This one's published by DeCapo Press. If you want to know more, go to harlowgilesunger.com. I want to thank Harlow Giles Unger for joining us and our earlier guest, Holland Cook. I want to thank Dwayne Doobie Jr., our producer on the front line, the host and founder of the program, Carol Marks, and certainly all of our affiliates across the country. On behalf of all of us, I'm Michael Harrison, here in the Anchor Chair, inviting you to join us next weekend here for another installment of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups.